Go.
Hi, this is Dr. Joe Vitale, author of Attract Money Now. You're listening to The Kick-Ass Life Show with David Wood.
Want to make your life better? This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, David here. Welcome to the show. Excuse my voice. I'm broadcasting from Coolum, which is outside of Brisbane in Australia. I'm here for a 4.5-day leadership retreat, and I was asked to come in and write a program for this group of leaders that have come from all over Australia and New Zealand, and we've had such a great time, and you know, we're halfway through the program, and when I write programs like this, it's really a blend of classroom learning, specific strategies that you can learn, and then taking those strategies into a real life setting where I create scenarios which are always unknown to the students, where they have to and discover really who they are and what they are in the area of leadership or, you know, working with a team. And then they can come back and unpack it and sort of get a real understanding of some of the areas they need to work on personally to take their sort of their level of leadership to the next level. And I taught yesterday on the five levels of leadership, and it's incredible, you know, some of the ahas. We've got leaders in this room right now who have already created massive teams and making huge amounts of money, you know, 80,000, 60,000, 50,000 a month, 30,000 a month from leveraging their teams. And still, you know, so open and willing to grow and learn and to continue to get better. You know, there's a couple of sort of rules with this type of group is, you know, you're not going to make it alone. You can't make it alone. And so you have to continue to grow into the area of leadership. Doesn't matter what you want to do in life to become a great leader. Obviously, there's some learned skills. And once we realize what those learned skills are and we start to say, wow, you know, that's interesting, then I take people out of that lesson into a real life activity where suddenly those skills have to become part of a practice. So it's really, really fascinating. The program's been a great blend of classroom learning and experiential learning. And absolute fun. We have had a blast. Part of the reason my throat is like it is more of the evening activities of us hanging out together. We had a great joke session last night, which was just hilarious. We were just howling to the point where people are crying in tears. So having a great time. I'm looking forward to getting home, seeing the boys. But it's been just a beautiful trip all over Australia, of course, and Thailand, and now down in Coolum. We were out on the beach yesterday. And for those of you that don't understand or can't visualize Australian beaches, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of miles, really, of beach. That is massive white sand. It squeaks when you walk on it. It's almost like a silica. And these rolling waves. There's a big northerly wind coming in yesterday and these big waves crashing on the beach. But just so wild and windswept. And, of course, you know, most Aussies live very, very close to water. And so it's just a beautiful setting, but for people who aren't used to it, it's staggeringly beautiful, just staggeringly beautiful. So make sure you put Australia on your bucket list, and we're going to get on with the show today, and it's really pertinent that we have our guest who is an experiential educator. He's an adventurer, and he's an incredible team builder. His book, Teams on the Edge, Stories and Lessons from Wilderness Expeditions, is an amazing book. And he spent over 2,000 days in the wilderness. So, and you know, some of the things you're going to learn on today's show is what it means to be part of a team and the importance of teams and how to sort of fall in love with your team, even if you don't always get on with them, right? And how to team build through leadership, you know, how to build trust, which is critically important in the leadership quadrants. And, you know, giving feedback in a really powerful way that works. And the importance of knowing your role when you're in a team. So, you know, I want you to sit back and really enjoy this amazing, amazing man who really, really has lived a great life and has been on some of the greatest expeditions, and you're going to hear some of those stories. So sit back and relax and enjoy the wonderful Sean Stratton.
So, as ever, you know, I'm always searching for a word, and, you know, I am so excited with my guest, and I have his book in my little grubby hands, and it's such an awesome book, and it's like, we'll talk about that in a moment, but Sean, welcome to the call.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
You know, Sean, as a personal development trainer who does a lot outdoors, I take a lot of people outdoors, when I see what you do, it's a whole other level. You know, you have 15 years, 2,000 days of wilderness expeditions into some of the most incredible places on Earth. Just sort of start me off. I mean, the idea of a team to you, because obviously a lot of this is about, or most of it's about team building. What does it mean to be part of a team and to be a team player to you?
Well, when I think about a team, I think, you know, you become a team because you're trying to achieve a goal, a purpose that you can't do by yourself, because many times it is a lot easier by ourselves, and we would do it if we could do it by ourselves. So we're placed in teams, and so that's what teams are all about for me. And what it takes to be a team member and what it is to be a team member is to be an active participant within that group that's helping to achieve its full potential and striving towards that mission or goal or focus.
And do you find that, I mean, because so many teams, they struggle to work. And what do you think, what's one of the primary causes? I mean, I want to go into the whole story and sort of dig out how you got to this, but I want people who are listening to really understand the importance of teams. But what are some of the team dynamics that you find often don't work in, especially in corporate environments or, in, you know, environments with walls?
Yeah, well, the easy one to pick on is communication. And you know, that goes so deep and for so many levels that so much miscommunication out there has caused so many teams to become defunct and dysfunctional. But a lot of it I come down to, a lot of what I teach now is I call team building through leadership. And I think it's about the leadership skills that enable you to be a quality team player, because you can do all the icebreaker and team activities to get to know each other and to work. But if you don't have those skills, those communication leadership skills, you're not going to be able to be that quality team member you want to be. And a lot of times people just don't have those skills, whether it's, you know, how to give quality feedback to each other, how to praise each other, how to, you know, let people know when things are bothering you, how to, you know, how to prep a meeting, how to run a meeting, so many of these communication details. It's not that people are bad or that don't like each other. A lot of people just don't have them. Haven't received the training somehow they kind of missed out on them.
Sure. So with that, you know, if we look at some of these important elements, and before we really get into, because I'd love you to sort of give away some of these skills that someone say, you know, I'm starting to see that. Take us on one of your journeys. I mean, imagine, so here I am, I'm a guy. I look at you and I get really excited by what you do. And I think, yep, I'm going to come with you and I'm going to learn my sort of team building through leadership. Tell us what that would involve and what kind of journeys we could come on together.
Yeah, you know, these days a lot of the work I do is with corporate groups and organizations, and it's more retreat format in terms of offsites, 1-, 2-day, 3-day retreats, and that's what I do a lot now. I do some outdoor stuff with groups as it permits. You know, ideally I'd love to have every group come with me in the wilderness for multiple days, but when it gets down to the nuts and bolts of organizing these things and the reality of it, it becomes a lot harder. But I've definitely taken folks sea kayaking. That a lot of the expeditions I've led previously, are usually people that haven't known each other. They're actually people that are showing up for some leadership skills and outdoor skills training, and they have no history with each other. And I love that. I love it's like creating a society from scratch.
But what you're saying, though, what you've found, I mean, and some of your, I think I read somewhere that over 9 years, you didn't live anywhere for more than 3 months, right? So
yeah.
Obviously, you know, you must be a master at connecting and a master at sort of stepping into new places in the unknown and sort of making it known. But, you know, if we sort of look at that sort of journey that's led you to become so effective at teaching team building, can you take us back then on some of the adventures you've been on?
Sure. Yeah. It's, you know, for me, a lot of it started in university. You know, I grew up kind of in the scouts and in the outdoors, hiking and camping. My family wasn't a hiking, camping family. And luckily I had the scouts as kind of my outlet, and didn't know there was a career or a world in this at all. And in university, I was doing a course on experiential education, and I learned about Outward Bound and the National Outdoor Leadership School and other organizations that promote personal growth and development utilizing the wilderness as their classroom. And for me, that was my, you call it, light bulb moment. It was like, wow, this exists out there. There's people that do this, and you can make a career out of this. And from that moment on, I changed my kind of focus in my degree and finished a university with an outdoor education degree and went on to work with Outward Bound and Knowles, who are kind of the leaders in the industry. And, you know, the expeditions, a lot of them, I worked with Knowles for over 10 years, and a lot of them are adults that are looking for some more leadership skills. They're looking for outdoor skills. And the majority, I'd say, of those expeditions are a lot of semester students that are coming from college programs and are looking to build their team building leadership skills, outdoor skills, and also looking to get away and find themselves a little bit.
Sure. And, you know, when we go into that sort of experiential classroom, and there's for you personally, can you think back to some of the sort of the big ahas as you've gone into experiences and you've sort of found different levels of your own ability? Because for you to be able to teach this, you had to learn it. Can you sort of think back to some of those times, some of the big lessons for you that you've been able to develop these great skills in communication and team building?
Sure. You know, sometimes after my expeditions, I always would feel a little guilty because I felt that I learned more than I was teaching. I think that's, you know, that's what a lot of leaders get when they work with their groups, because, you know, you got to be learning to be teaching, I think. And, you know, some of the ahas for me come from realizing that as a leader, it doesn't mean that it's that you have to do it all on your own. And for most challenges, you can't do it on your own. One expedition in India I talk about in the book, we had a student break his tibia and fibula at about 12,000 feet in the Himalayas, and it was an open fracture. The bone was sticking out of his leg. And as I found out about this, the other students came to me and were like, "David's in the drainage, he's got a broken leg." And that was kind of a deep breath moment of, oh boy, here we go. And you know, I'd been trained for 15 years in wilderness first aid, but I've never dealt with a broken bone or an open fracture, let alone in the conditions and location where we were. And, you know, as that ordeal went on and at the end of it, as the ordeal started, I was, you know, a couple deep breaths and was like, wow, you're the leader of this expedition. You've got to make this happen. You've got to make it work. You've got to get him out of here successfully. You got to, you know, make sure he gets through this, and you've got to keep the whole expedition running and keep everybody else going, and you. And quickly I realized that, you know, within probably a half an hour of starting to deal with this situation, I realized that, no, it's not about me. And no, I can't do this on my own. And no, we're not going to get anywhere if I try to do it all myself. And so I need to utilize the team and rally on the team. And, that's exactly what happened. The team just kicked into gear, and everybody took on their role selflessly. And if they didn't know what role to do, they asked what they could do. And this team just rallied. We had them in the mountains for 19 hours before we could get a Indian Air Force helicopter in to get them out. And, that was an amazing ordeal that we went through. And as that helicopter took off, in the snow that we'd just had 3 feet of snow dump on us that night, when there was no snow anywhere the day before, when the helicopter took off, I just took a deep breath and stuck my head in the snow and I cried. And it was the first time, you know, on any expedition I'd ever cried. And it was just an overwhelming feeling of emotion. And I was elated that David was getting out of there, out of the mountains, but I was just overcome with emotion that this team had just rallied together to pull this amazing feat off. And that was a huge aha for me. It's like, you know, you're the leader, but it's not about you. It's, you got to get on this team.
And, you know, if we talk about, you know, corporate teams or network marketing teams or anywhere, anyone who is stepping into this, into any form of leadership roles, isn't that a common mistake where the, you know, you have to do, or I have to do everything and not really allowing the team dynamics to emerge?
For sure, for sure. You know, I find that so many times in the organizational corporate world that, you know, so many of us, especially that are feel have some strong leadership qualities or used to being leaders, we have a hard time letting go and delegating and letting that team, you know, utilize and achieve greater successes than you can ever achieve. But you feel that, you know, I've got to do it, I've got to do it. And then that comes down to a lot of the trust and accountability. The foundations, you know, I talk about with any team is trust. And I go through methods of how to build trust and how we do it on expeditions, which can be very similar to how you do it in the corporate world.
Let's talk about, I mean, how to build trust is one thing, but what is a common thing you see where people break trust? What's an easy way to break trust early on in a relationship, especially when you're working together or you're, you know, on an exhibition together?
I think accountability and responsibility is an easy way to break trust. And, you know, people call it dropping the ball or call it what you will. But I think, you know, sometimes leaders or team members may give too much responsibility and they can't and the team members can't handle it or they, you know, for whatever reason, they don't follow through and they're not living up to their expectations because of the responsibility that they've missed. And that's a, you know, a great way to start to lose trust, you know, and there is a bit of a potential out there to have a trust bank. So, you know, you start off with, you start off building trust and, you know, some people sometimes drop the ball and it doesn't work out, but that's okay because, you know, over the years or over the time you've been a reliable person or, you know, you have a good explanation.
Mm. And so if you're in a situation, I want to sort of move this into the corporate realm or into the network marketing realm, because we have people from sort of both areas who listen in. Mm-hmm. And we start talking about some of these areas you talked about. You talked about communication, feedback, praise, you know, how to sort of prep meetings. I mean, these sort of day-to-day things, which again, you know, you've taken into some of the most extreme environments in the world and really being able to, because that puts an intensity and turns up the heat to such a level that, you know, we're talking about life and death in many situations, as you just explained. But really, I mean, it's the same stuff, right? If we're going from the high Himalayas down into, you know, corporate America, those same things we're talking about, whether play out in exactly the same way, but it's just not life and death, right?
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with you. It's not life and death, and you're not having to sleep with each other every night for a month at a time. You get to go home at night, and a lot of cases, you get to close the door. In the situations in the mountains, yeah, you deal with everybody all day long, and then you go to sleep next to them in their tent. But yeah, it's. You know, I think it's just under a microscope, basically, when you take people in the wilderness, you know, you take away everything that you can potentially hide behind in our world, whether it's clothes or dress or makeup or alcohol or whatever. There's nothing to hide behind and you get the real people showing up. But the dynamics are very similar. Yeah, very, very similar.
And so with when we talk about communication, you said that's kind of one of the number one. Can you share a little bit about some of the tips or someone listening in? We're in 173 countries. So there's people out there who, you know, I mean, this stuff works in our own families. It works with our friends. It works in a corporate setting. So, I mean, this is something that moves across every part of our life. We're a great communicator. We're great across the board. Can you give us some tips of the things you've learned in these harsh situations that we can bring back into our homes?
Yeah, you know, one thing I've been trying to focus on more in the last few years is what we call feed forward instead of feedback, and utilizing feed forward. And basically what feed forward is like it sounds. It's giving people suggestions and information that will help them in the future based on a certain situation. So in a lot of my workshops, I'll get people to pair up and I'll say, you know, think of a behavior that you would like to change in your life. It doesn't have to be anything drastic. It could be something small, anything. And they pair up and they have to share what they would like to change. And then their partner has a few moments to give them some feed forward on how to change that. And so what feed forward is you're discussing in the future, this is maybe what you could do to help change your behavior. whereas feedback is so focused in our mindset on negativity, on constructive, on, you know, this is what you did wrong. It's blaming, it's accusing, it's digging up the past. It's very, very challenging. And you know, feedback done properly can be very, very valuable. But I think most times it's done very poorly. And practicing feed forward, it's you're not that blaming, that accusing. It's not there because whatever you're talking about hasn't even happened yet. And so that's one tip that's been working really well.
I like it. You know, this idea, though, because I mean, when you say to someone, hey, listen, I got a little feedback for you, most people go immediately to, oh, crap, what did I do wrong? Right?
Exactly.
So in the situation, like, again, someone in the corporate world right now or someone with their kids and they have to give feedback to someone. What are the tips when feedback or the feed forward maybe method isn't necessarily going to work, but you really need to give feedback? Do you still go feed forward, or can you give feedback in a great way?
Yeah, I think you can give feedback in a great way. And, you know, you've got to pick the time and place to do it. It's, you know, very important. It's, you know, similar to goals. You talked about goals in a recent episode and you talked about SMART goals. Well, it's similar to feedback. You know, feedback's got to be timely. Doesn't mean that it has to be happening right now, but it has to happen in a time that's good for both of you. I've dealt with folks that are in a conflicting situation and they really need to, you know, have some dialogue with a facilitator. And I was going to be that facilitator. And there's times I've done that and it just blew up in the middle of our conversation. And it's like, okay, this is not the right time for this. There hasn't been enough time to air things out. We're going to revisit this next week or tomorrow at another time. So it needs to be timely. But it also, the biggest part I think about feedback being effective is that it needs to have a good ratio of constructive to positive. I don't really use the word negative at all with feedback. It's constructive or positive. And there's been studies done, and they say that the optimal level or the bare minimum level of a ratio of the positive to constructive feedback is 2.9. So let's say 3-1, positive to constructive feedback. And that's the bare minimum. Anything less than that, the person's just going to be overwhelming negative in that conversation because they're just going to walk out of there with too much negativity. They say studies have shown that, you know, high-performing teams have a ratio of 7-1, positive to constructive. And so when you want to give somebody feedback, don't wait until that moment when something's gone wrong and you're like, hey, can I give you some feedback? You know, take them aside and say, you know, when something's gone right or they've done something really well, can I give you some feedback? Sure, go ahead. You know, that was fantastic. I really like this. Like goals, you need to be specific. How many times people hear, oh, you've done a good job. And good job is, it's nice, but it's fairly useless because tell me what I did a good job at so I can do it again.
You know, I just got goosebumps. I got to tell you this, because every time I get goosebumps, I tend to make money. I move deeply. But the 7-1 ratio, I love. But what you said right after that, which is take somebody outside and give them feedback. Hey, can I give you some feedback? They're immediately going to think, hey, guess what? I've done something wrong. And you say, I just want to tell you what a fabulous job you just did doing such and such. Or, you know, the way you treated such and such right now, that was unbelievable. Or, you know, I just really love how you stepped in. But you're saying two things. First of all, that 7-1 ratio, if in our life we were using the 7-1 and we were treating ourselves like a high performance team, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. and that we took the opportunity to take people outside or even in front of people, which I'm sure is maybe even more effective. Is there a thing that you've seen of that type of impact, what it has on someone?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I get letters every year from folks I've had on expeditions and students and that and you know, places that they've things that they've done following, you know, our expeditions and I think it's kind of led from those positivity and those statements and that kind of that confidence building that's happened over kind of that structure that we set up on these expeditions that I try to live by with that. You know, I see how it's affected people all the time. You know, a specific case, I have the letters to talk about it, but it's one of those things that when you get this stuff, it plants seeds in your head and it evolves over weeks and months and years, you know, in terms of confidence building and the forward. And it's, you know, if you want people that are doing good things, you want them to keep doing it, you need to tell them that. And so many times in the corporate world and every team aspect, we're so focused on the stuff that's below the waterline. And that takes so much of our time and energy that we don't get to focus on the people that are doing really great things, and we need to be aware of that.
Well, you know, I was thinking about, as a father, I know that you're a father of two daughters, Sierra and Trinity. Beautiful names, beautiful names, by the way. But you're, I kind of, in that moment, I mean, I'm not a guy that lives in a lot of regret, but I kind of wish that I had taken this on, you know, 15 years ago, or with this feedback situation where I thought about it in that way. You know, I'm going to do a 7-to-1 ratio of feedback with my kids on what they're doing right. That would have a massive impact on most children, on all children.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And you know, you got to remember too, because obviously 7-to-1 would be challenging. You got to make sure those seven are authentic. Because, you know, I could see people with their little checkboard at their desk and, okay, I gave Johnny and Susie a pat on the back this morning. So that's a couple, but,
no, I mean, actually, let's talk about the authentic piece, because that's something that went through my mind when you talked about, you know, even giving positive feedback. I do a lot of programs where I put people into the art of conversation. And at some point, I ask them to pay each other compliments. And so many of the compliments I hear are really like skimming stones across water. It's because that muscle isn't built. So do you find that it's very easy to be inauthentic in that positive feedback loop?
Yeah. You know, I've worked with groups like that as well that, you know, we'll do kind of round the circle feedback, and I'll set up the structure for this session, you know, okay, give, you know, three positive and one constructive. And sometimes they're pulling straws at trying to come up with something because it on the spot it has to come up. And so it's hard when it's, you know, when these situations are fairly contrived when you're in a training group, but I think it's good practice. And that's kind of when it would come up like that. But it's, it's you know, you've got to work hard to come up with these authentic seven elements, but they mean that much more once they come up with it. You know, I'll often ask people, how many times in the run of a week have you been thanked by your supervisor or manager? And I am shocked by the amount of response I get. You know, it's very, very few. Very few go 7 days without, or 5 days working days without being thanked. I mean, most people go through a week without being thanked by their manager.
Right. Yeah. And I'm thinking of that myself because I, you know, it's easy to get busy and not take that moment. Can we talk about agreements for a minute? Because I think about, you know, when I'm putting groups together, you know, I always find that, you know, setting strong agreements is so important, and expeditions and whatever. Can you talk to me the importance of agreements, and how do you set strong agreements either, you know, for an expedition or in a work environment or even relationships? Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah. I've got that's another big aspect I work on. And, you know, I think I tweeted or wrote on Facebook the other day a kind of a quote that I've been dealing with a lot in the groups I've worked with, that, you know, everybody wants a job description. Everybody has a job description typically when they start a job, but no one knows their role. Yeah. And that keeps coming up time and time again with groups I'm working with, and that these people are on teams, and then you ask them, so what's your role? And they're like, well, it's not really sure about that, because I thought I was supposed to be doing this, but so-and-so seems to be making those decisions, or things keep getting dropped. And so people don't really know their role. And I think that's a battle that the corporate world is dealing with, because they don't want to pigeonhole people into being too narrow and not have creative thinking. But at the same time, if people don't know their role or their expectations within the team, then they can't perform to that level. One thing I do with most groups I start with is I do an activity called the team recipe. And this is to come up with a full value contract that this group is agreeing to live by for the length that this team is together. And it's a great group activity where, you know, so often that in the business world, they're given a policy manual and say, you know, here's how we do things at our company, and here's how you're supposed to act. And that's great and all, but you know, in your individual team, you need to have your own norms and your own societal differences and things that you want to achieve. So this team recipe, just to quickly run through it, it's basically they brainstorm the best teams they'd ever been on in their life. What elements of that do you want to take away with, that you want to bring to this group? And so they get in small groups and they think about the best teams they've ever worked on. What made that such a special moment? They brainstorm that. And then we basically work as a whole group to break down the massive list of 30 or 40 or 50 things they've come up with. And we break it down to kind of 5 to 7 manageable items. Sometimes we'll have little sub items. And we do that on a flip chart. Sometimes we'll do it on a wall or in a journal, depending on, you know, what the situation is. And then I encourage people to, then everybody gets to sign it once we've done a good copy. Everybody signs it. And this is their contract of what they decided to live by. And, you know, a lot of the common ones of communication and trust are there. I really try to get them to become specific. It's, okay, what about communication? And so they take away this team recipe, and I encourage them to look at it, you know, once a quarter, once a year, once a month, as needed, but on a regular basis, and then evaluate themselves. Okay, so that day when we were at that retreat, we did this. How are we doing today? You know, let's give ourselves a grade A, B, or C on each of these. And where we're slipping below, let's focus on working on those. Why is that the case? And that actually is a really good tool. I've used that just about every expedition for about 10 years. I've done that.
And, I want to interrupt for a second because I love this grading part. You know, because I think of teams, corporate teams, again, you know, if the team sat and they said, okay, guys, let's do exactly this exercise, the team recipe. You know, we get best teams you've ever been on, isolate it down. They come up with the 7, and you talked about communication, trust being part of that, right? Yep. But then this kind of like sitting down and even if it was, I suppose, biweekly or weekly, if they said, hey, listen, so how are we doing? How are we doing on our agreements? You know, and if there's stuff there that's unsaid, or if there's, you know, breakdown in communication, that's kind of like, it sounds to me like that would nip that in the bud more quickly, as opposed to what mostly happens is it festers and it gets worse and worse and worse and people can't even communicate anymore, right?
Exactly. And that's why I tell people, you know, you can bring it out at any time, but before we leave the session, let's come up with an agreement of how often we're going to look at it. Because too often we bring out these things, or even meetings are called when, you know, things are dropping below the waterline and you know, there's a crisis. But we need to have meetings when things are going great. Yeah. And just, you know, we went through that meeting and we're like, bing, A, we're doing great. Great. That's a 5-minute meeting and we're going to carry on.
Let me talk to you about, you know, this is a common situation that I see. I work in corporations sometimes and, you know, and watch those dynamics. But, you know, where you've got an impasse, you've got two people and maybe one's been promoted and one who's been around a long time, and they're both powerful. They both play good roles, but they're sort of an impasse. What's a thought or a process that you think you could take them into? Or what's a way that they can approach finding a place to be together and work together, you know, in a situation like that?
Yeah, I had a client after a session, after a speech the other day, came up with that exact question. And she was dealing with it as that someone was her manager, but she kind of has more experience with the company and she was struggling with this. And, you know, at the bottom line in any team, you know, I tell people you have to have respect for each other. Sure, you may not be the best friends and you may not have much in common, but you need to find something about that person that you respect, and you need to rally on that in your daily focus with them. On the other side of it as well, you need to know what your needs are as a person within the team. You know, sometimes there's things that are rubbing your shoulders or rubbing you the wrong way about this person. It's making it difficult. Well, you need to find out, you need to decide, you know, is that just a small irritating thing that I can really suck it up and live with, and it's not worth bringing up? Or, hey, is this behavior really affecting my performance on the team, and I really do need to bring it up? You need to decide at what level that is. And then, you know, if you can't deal with that person one-on-one, or if it's just not working out, you've tried to approach them, you know, you can get other folks involved. And, you know, at the end of the day, if it's really not working out with you two and it's a you know, an impasse, then you have to decide what's best for you. And, you know, whether that's removing yourself from the team or, you know, looking for other positions within the company, or at the end of the day, you know, you can't sit there and be in a destructive, toxic environment. It's not helpful for you. You're not going to be benefiting your team.
It's interesting, you know, because in February we climbed Kilimanjaro and right. I led a team of 11. And there were two teams, actually. There were two teams of 11. In our group, and watching team dynamics and seeing how the team structure in that environment. And that's not, I mean, Kilimanjaro is still a very dangerous climb. And in fact, a team ahead of us, one of their participants passed away on the first summit. So, So I don't want to minimize the fact that it's Kilimanjaro and it maybe is not, but it's still watching those dynamics and watching people being affected by high altitude and altitude sickness and, you know, diarrhea and not everyone, but watching how some people chose to lead with an aggressive hand and barking instructions, and how some teams were, you know, just fluid and they worked well and they brought the best out of each other. In those situations, it's extremely, again, we talked about life and death. I wonder, with a situation like that, when we talk about leadership and we say, you know, if you were leading a group, which you've done many, many times, up a mountain, or somebody else was about to lead up a mountain, and what do you think as a leader is a very common mistake that's made that creates a lot of friction? I mean, we talked about communication and trust. I get all that, but I'm talking about from more of a personal point of view, a personal thought process that sort of is put onto the team that creates friction or creates, you know, a lack of team.
Yeah, I think hidden agendas is a big thing. Personal agendas as a leader, you've got to, you know, you've got to be in love with your team as a leader. And if you're not, and you've got to be in love with the team mission and the whole concept of being there and why you're there. And if you're not, if you've got that hidden agenda, that's when people start to revolt and start, you know, not paying attention and not listening and things happen, bad things happen. And, you know, a big part of what we teach on our expeditions, and I now call expedition behavior, and I call it, you know, expedition behavior for the office. And it's all about being that teammate that you want to have. It seems very simple, but it's a common thing. And we keep bringing it up on these trips of like, hey, that was good EB, good expedition behavior. And I, you know, pat people on the back and I point it out when I see it. And, if you're a leader without that passion for the drive, for your team and for your goal, then people are going to start to wonder what's going on. And a big part of that is, I'm sure you've seen, is role modeling. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a leader that's, you know, hypocritical, you talk about this a lot, and who's not role modeling, who's not living the life that they're preaching, they're talking about, then they're going to lose a lot of respect from that.
Well, and it's become even more prevalent today with the authenticity has become, I mean, especially with young people, you know, they can smell BS from so far away. Whereas, sure, you know, in my generation, I know you're younger than I am, but in my generation, you know, it was very much, you know, he's the boss, does what he wants. But there really truly is this the hypocritical part, or this this idea that authenticity and truth do play a massive role, right? And it is easy to smell as well, right?
For sure. And that's, I love that as a challenge, leading these expeditions, living 24/7 with a group, because you don't really get an off time. You don't get to go home at the end of the night. And so that's a constant challenge on me as a leader in the wilderness environment, is that, you know, you're on and they're watching you. You a lot of times you don't realize, but those teammates and it's the same in the corporate world. They've got eyes like hawks on their leaders. You know, what time did they come in today? What time did they leave work today? You know, how many times are they responding after 5 o'clock on their phone? There's too many times I talk to people that are trying to maybe work less after office hours, and I'll ask them about their manager, their supervisor, and like, do they do that? And prevalently 9 times out of 10, their managers are doing the same thing, and so they're not role modeling this, you know, work life behavior.
Yeah, I was going to say one other thing on Kilimanjaro, which I noticed was most of the people that get into a lot of trouble are not the people who are unfit. Actually, it's quite often the very young unfit and, you know, really muscly, and they kind of attack the mountain with this kind of like, you know, charge ahead and leaving people behind. And of course, the altitude just sort of kicks them in the butt. Talk about ego a little bit and what you've seen both on expeditions. I know in expeditions, obviously it's easy to be humbled. But in an office environment or a work environment or a network marketing environment, sometimes, you know, that humbling it's not as obvious. And so people, you know, are constantly pushing people away without realizing how the ego is playing that role. Can you talk about your experience with that?
Yeah. You see that, you know, I see that in expeditions. You do see it in the corporate world for sure. And a lot of it, you know, the great analogy I give is climbing Mount Logan, the highest mountain in Canada. And on our way down, the mountain, we kept bumping into these teams that were all infighting. They all had come over to us and chat with us and want information about the route up. We were the first team up that year, and they wanted information. And as we got chatting with them, they were just telling, like, oh, my buddy, he's one of the teammates, his partner had gone blind because he thought he was so fit and healthy, and he went up way too fast, and now he was losing his vision, and they were going to have a helicopter rescue. And they were 5 days into their 20-day expedition they'd been planning a year for. And there was all these situations, and I'd boil it back to expedition behavior again, and expedition behavior definitely is about checking your ego at the door. And the idea of it is, you could have the best mountaineer skills, you could have the best engineers, you could have the best designers in the world working on this team for this project, but if everybody's got their own ego in line and focusing on themselves, you're not going to get anywhere as a team. And these teams on Mount Logan, some of them had the best mountaineers, best skilled mountaineers in the world there that had been all over, and they weren't going to get past halfway up on that mountain, because in mountains like this, you can't travel by yourself. You need to be roped up to team members going over glacier terrain. And they were going to turn around. Whereas, other teams up there that had much less experience but were working well as a team and had enough experience to get up the mountain, potentially summited that year.
Well, I talk with this analogy, I remember the big day on Everest when all the deaths occurred a few years ago. Sure. The Canadian lady died. There's that sort of get there-itis, in spite of all of the experience and all of the, everyone left and they were sort of all stuck at Hillary's step and, people.
Summit fever, we call it.
I think, again, I'm trying to bring it back into a normal environment, a team where a leader is so fixed on their next rank or hitting the goal or the money or whatever it is, in network marketing, it's like, getting to such and such. Do you feel there's a big similarity there and there's going to be a lot of casualties when someone has that kind of philosophy?
I do, for sure, yeah. And that's a lot of times when I get called in to work with corporate groups, I generally call it team intervention. And,
You have great language. I love it. I keep writing stuff down.
Yeah, these companies call and they're just like, we've got an incredible group of individuals. The only problem is they're not really working together. And I've seen actually HR departments are now coming up with bonus structures on how well they work as a team. So it's not just you get bonuses if you achieve this or you achieve this. Everybody gets a chance to give the whole group feedback, and they actually have a bonus structure based on how well they work as a team, which is pretty revolutionary. And it's kind of sad that it's gotten to that, but they're trying everything they can.
Another thing, again, witnessing this in especially in dangerous situations where you've got that sort of one bad apple, and I'm not saying necessarily the leader himself, but it could be yep. someone who really isn't playing for the team. I love your analogy, by the way. You said you got to fall in love with a mission and fall in love with the team. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such an easy concept for anyone who's leading any type of team. But this idea then that you've got this, you're on an expedition, you've got somebody who is sort of negative and maybe darker. How often do you see where people, instead of choosing to stay light, actually topple into the dark pit with them? So, it's almost like a bunch of crabs pulling each other in the pot.
Well, yeah, and I've got a great example of this again in the book, a whole chapter on it. And that is actually the chapter that I almost left out because it doesn't have kind of a flashy life and death story. It's a behavioral story. And it was probably one of the most challenging expeditions I've led because of that. And I think, in this particular time, we had one student that just wasn't fitting with this group. And, it started off well, and then it just started to go downhill fast. And we worked with them and and did everything we could to try to blend them in with the group and make sure they knew we're clear on expectations and clear on behaviors that we needed to see and this and this. And it just kept going to a point that we were forced to remove them from the expedition, which, it's a horrible thing to do, but it was best for them and best for the team. And they resisted the whole way. We another phrase that we often use is weed your garden early. And I know
can't wait to read this book.
Yeah, I know it sounds harsh, but we're all people out there. But at the same time, if you let that that cancerous cell sit in your group, it's going to start bringing those people to their side, to that dark side, and going down that hole. And I was resisting this the whole way, and I was aware of this. I'm like, if we don't do something about this, he's going to bring people down with him. Or, you know, I had people coming over to our camp crying because of behaviors, that things that he said to them during the day that just lost it and just were way beyond the norm for this type of expedition. And so, you know, getting back to that kind of picking your team wisely and being quick to make changes. And obviously you don't want to be just dropping people here and there, but a lot of times if you're in a leadership position, you kind of know when, okay, you know, we've made a bad call here having this person on the team, or maybe you've inherited a team that you didn't have a chance to pick yourself, and you can realize that, okay, there's a bad apple here. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times the best thing to do is to remove that person. And luckily, on the expedition, this ended up being a 70-day expedition, and they were, I think, with the group for maybe 18 or 19 days, which was a lot longer than I wanted, but it still allowed us to have time to salvage the expedition, and we went on to have an incredible trip. And years later, when I was writing this book, I got in touch with many of the students from that trip and asked them a few questions about how that experience was with that student, and they could hardly remember him. And that was the greatest thing I heard. I was like, oh, really? Because I think it had a much more impact on me being the leader and knowing all the stuff going on behind the scenes. But knowing that we managed to salvage it and really pull the team together and have a great expedition in the end was all because we removed this particular person.
Yeah. And again, these analogies are crossing the board. Let's talk about the book. I got it in my grubby little hand here. I just flicked through as you were telling that story, and just some amazing, amazing photographs. In amazing situations. And then you talk about a 70-day expedition. What's the longest expedition you've ever done?
Yeah, I've done two 74-day, 3 months essentially. One in Baja California, Mexico. That was basically a month of backpacking, a month of sea kayaking, and 3 weeks of sailing. And then another one was in Alaska, and that was a month of sea kayaking, a month of backpacking, and a month of canoeing in the Arctic.
I want to let people know where they can get the book. Sean Stratton, and that's Stratton, and Sean is Shawn, SeanStratton.com. The book is a phenomenal book. Tell people why they need to get this book and have a read of it. I mean, and by the way, I am so excited. This is going to be my reading fodder for this next 2 days. And the beauty of it is it's a very compact book, right? It's not a book that's going to take, you know, 6 weeks to read, right?
No, for sure. It's a quick read for those that are interested in this type of stuff. I've heard of folks for sure sitting down and getting through it with one read. I had other folks that I talked to that say, oh, no, I just do one chapter at a time because I want to draw it out.
talking about that, you know, a friend of mine tells me about something he does, and this may be before you tell about the book, about the way he reads a book. He'll read it once fast, and he underlines the things that he really loves, and then he changes the color of the pen, and he'll read it again and underline the things, and then he'll find that some things hit him differently, and some things have these double lines under them, and those are the things that he really draws out. And I think it was quite an interesting philosophy of reading.
Yeah, yeah, I could see doing that, or even passing it off to a friend.
Oh, to underline it—that's a good idea too.
What did the friend like? Yeah. Yeah, the book is it's called Teams on the Edge, Stories and Lessons from Wilderness Expeditions. And, you know, it was in my head for about 5 years, kind of to write a book, and I slowly started picking away at it. And it just was released in July 1st, and the last 2 years it really kind of came together. Like most things, it took a lot longer than you expect. I could almost write a book on writing a book now. But
that's going to be your next book.
Yeah, I think so. But it was fun. I did a lot of research and learned a lot about that and marketing a book and getting it all out there. But
and a bestseller, yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
It hit number one on Amazon like a few weeks after it was out, and it's been topping back up there on and off for the last couple of months. So it's been really successful. And I wanted to, you know, first starting off, I was like, well, I've got these interesting stories. And when you live in the industry, you don't necessarily think they're that interesting because you think everybody around you has done lots of great stuff and they've got, you know, better stories than me. But I thought, you know, worst case scenario, I write this all down and my grandkids read it someday. And, you know, at least it's captured. And then as it evolved, I, you know, managed to blend that, just not just getting the stories out, but blend it with the lessons that I'm, you know, working with every day now in the leadership consulting and team building. And so I've basically used the story to pull out a team building lesson from that story. And I end each chapter with a bullet box of kind of a lesson, a team building lesson, and then kind of an inquiring question that you can read that can relate back to your team, you know. And then it talks a little bit, the intro is a little bit about how I got into this industry, because it's, you know, it seems to be an interesting industry, the folks that don't know about it, and kind of my path. And then I finish off with kind of where my path is now, and how I've kind of transferred out of the full-time expedition industry.
Yeah, you know, and I love the I'm flicking through as you're talking this, you know, and this $30,000 blister. What a great chapter! Yeah. And this, I think this lesson disclosure is so great, because it's so easy, right? Like you said, you know, and I'm looking at this lesson disclosure of the $30,000 blister. You know, to be a true team player, it's important to disclose any issues, personal or professional, that might impact your group. The success of your team relies on you to perform your role to the best of your ability, and if something could threaten that performance, your companion needs to know about it. It's to avoid a potential confusing, detrimental, or dangerous situation. Anyways, you go on, and what it is it, again, these things are taken into whether you're building a network marketing business, whether you're building a corporation, whether you're on a team of any kind. Every single lesson is transferable, right?
For sure. Yeah, it all relates. You know, at the end of the day, we're all people, and you know, I get asked about different groups all the time. Like, there's still a group, you know, there's still a group, and the group dynamics are usually pretty straightforward with all groups, and it doesn't matter really with the location.
Well, again, remember, it's SeanStratton.com. That's where you have to go and get this. And Sean, I ask everyone the last question, the same question. I know you listen to the show. And by the way, thank you for listening to the show. You know, kick-ass life. So what's a kick-ass life to you?
Yeah, a kick-ass life to me is someone that's loving every day. And I think too many of us think to the future. And I think thinking to the future is great, but we're always waiting for that happy day to come. And you've got to love what you're doing now, you know? And I ask people a lot of times, you know, what did you do today? All right, well, that's what you made your priority. Oh, really? And so you got to make kick-ass life a priority every day, and go to bed knowing that it was that. And it may have not been that glamorous or exciting, but you made it your priority, and that was a conscious priority, and kick-ass to you for doing that.
Hmm. Sean, what a great pleasure. Great book, great heart, and lessons that have been learned. I mean, you talk about 74-day voyages into the wilderness with a team. There is nothing that any person leading a team can't learn from this book, and I really enjoy your passion of life and your beauty and the heart that you live by, so thank you so much.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much, and thanks so much for this podcast. It's I'm sure it's opened people's eyes to wonderful lives, and I appreciate all the work you do.
Thank you.
Like I said to you, he was a great guy, great book. Don't forget to get the book, Teams on the Edge, Stories and Lessons from the Wilderness Expedition. It was an instant bestseller on Amazon, as you heard, which is awesome. It tells you a lot about the book. And someone who's devoted so many years to his craft and to leadership is I have such deep respect for. So again, enjoy that. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm looking forward to getting home. I will be broadcasting a couple more shows out here on my remote recording device, and so I will I'll be back into the high quality sound of my studio, and I hope you understand that when I'm out on the road here, you know, the sound quality, I can't always guarantee it. I just have to make do with what I have, and you know, we we have a lot of fun sometimes doing it. So I want to thank you again for all the reviews on iTunes. And again, just to remind you that we are going through some changes. So there is some big changes coming up. And so there's a lot of focus in different areas right now as we're looking at a much bigger picture. And as we look at that much bigger picture, you know, some of our what you're seeing on the internet and web and through iTunes is not as well oiled as it will be. We're just in the process of making some big changes. So again, please give us your patience, and remember to share the show. If you're really loving this show, why not share it with a few of your friends today? Think about it. Send it to maybe 10 people, a show that you love that's relevant to them. And sort of encourage them to come and have a listen, because it's a real great way for us to expand into people's hearts and minds with your help. help. And I really think of us all linking arms together to truly allow people to step into a kick-ass life where they can really show up themselves authentically and let their own light shine. And in doing so, really allow others to step into a greater life just by their example, not by what they tell them, but by how they live, the life that they choose to live. So with that being said, again, if you want to get the show notes, you understand how to do that. Just thekickasslife.com / I think it's 229. Try that. It could be 228. I think it's 229. So thekickasslife.com /229. That's 229 shows. Is that ridiculous or what? And again, if you can leave a review on iTunes, that's awesome. And don't forget to join us on Facebook. David on Facebook.com. David on Facebook.com. Love to have you come over there and leave any comments or any thoughts, suggestions, any ideas you have for the show, or any feedback. Love to get it. So with that being said, I have to get out of here because I got a whole group of people waiting for me to train them. And I've got some surprises up my sleeve today. We're going to have, again, a great blend of classroom and experiences. And I've got a couple of fabulous experiences for them and some great content for the classroom. So it's going to be a great day. And I will definitely see you on the other side.
That was kick-ass.